And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, the primaries are upon us. Ohio next week, Pennsylvania in a few weeks. People are beginning to pay a little bit of attention, at least the kind of people who vote in primaries. I wonder if you've noticed something I've noticed, that there are a large number, relatively speaking, of Republican candidates who have been accused by women of preying on them. They've gotten orders of protection out against these guys. Or the guys have been convicted of doing things. It seems as if these Republicans' idea of family values is that they have the right to pick on women. It's all through the country. Not every Republican, but a lot of them. Have you noticed this?
Yeah, this is one of the subtexts of the Republican party right now, and actually may have been for a while. There are several. One, of course, we have the race issue, the race system thing. The number two, the anti-immigrant issue. But then we have this issue of, I'll label it misogyny, which seems to have in the GOP two sides of the coin. And the one side, they're playing on male insecurity and fears. And there's a lot of layers to that. We know, particularly in the GOP, you have the non-college educated male section, which have been falling behind in society for a number of years, primarily since Reaganomics took over, where men feel that their place has been lost. A lot of them aren't able to support a family and what have you. You have some that are just angry that you have this incels group, involuntarily celibate group, that seem to be lashing out. Tucker Carlson has played on this phenomenon. Telling men that they're being challenged and they should be afraid of that, and he just produced another one of his crazy production numbers, film, whatever you would call it, where he talks about sperm counts going down. Remember, previously he talked about men in the military and women shouldn't be leading men and things like that. Now he's talking about men, tanning their testicles and ridiculous stuff like this. That's one side of the coin. The other is the misogyny side of the coin that's been there for a long, long time, not just in the GOP, but in society. Remember, historically, blacks achieved the right to vote after the Civil War with the 15th Amendment. But it took decades, 50 or 60 years thereafter, for women to get the right to vote, not until 1920 did women have the right to vote. And then we had this thing with the Equal Rights Amendment for women, which got opposed by conservatives, by the Phyllis Schlafly group of people, by these religious conservatives. Don't forget, you have that branch of the Southern Baptists who said the woman's place is to serve their men.
It's not just the Southern Baptists.
Well, yeah, but they're very strongly and open about that. I mean, we have that other thing now. I think to some extent, to a great extent, you have the anti-abortion movement saying women shouldn't create have control of their own bodies. That's part of this movement. But what you've talked about now is another phase of it, and this physicality that goes on with men harming women, and it's a whole bunch of things. We have, and I'll get to Pennsylvania in a moment here, But you have Eric Greitens out there in Missouri who had to resign, I believe, as governor, because he had a mistress who he tied up naked and took pictures of and threatened to blackmail. We have...
He's running for Senate. He's running for the
nomination. He's running for Senate. He's back. No shame. Yeah.
And he's in the lead.
Right. We've got a guy in Nebraska I think Trump is going out to campaign for this weekend who's been accused of abuse of women. You have Herschel Walker running in Georgia. He's been accused of abuse. You had in the Trump administration, remember Hope Hicks said that her boyfriend in the administration had mistreated her. You've got some of the other folks. You have Trump himself, who's being sued by women. This whole thing, and it doesn't seem to matter to the voter. And you know, the Republicans have been very, very good at projecting and out. You know, the QAnon people say it's the Democrats or the pedophiles and the ones that are a danger to society and taking advantage of things. But it's the Republicans. Don't forget, in Tennessee, they just passed a law that there's no age limit or age minimum for marriage. You know, 40-year-old men could do what the Taliban want to do and, you know, marry 12-year-old girls, this kind of thing. And, of course, now it's come back right here in our home of Pennsylvania, where Lieutenant Governor candidate Teddy Daniels, who was going to run for Congress and then got persuaded by Doug Mastriano to run for Lieutenant Governor on his ticket, has been at least credibly accused enough of abuse that there was a protection from abuse order entered this week up in Wayne County. And you know, Daniels is upset about that. I think what may have upset him even more is the fact that they took his guns away. And of course, guns are...
And his wife threw him out of the house.
Yeah, well, the judge threw him out of the house, said you can't do it.
Daniels is 300 pounds. He's a big guy. Impressive guy.
Oh, yeah, and he's got a temper. But don't forget, you know, what guns are a symbol of, too, to a lot of men. You know, it's a phallic symbol. So you see that throughout this GOP thing. But, you know, women are still voting and women are still running on the tickets for Republicans. It's an interesting phenomenon.
Well, do you think Teddy Daniels has a chance in Pennsylvania?
You don't know. You know, things are crazy enough that might be a badge of honor for him in some circles. You know, it depends on how strong Doug Mastriano is, because and from what I understand, Mastriano still may be the front runner. It's a very fractured race for governor. But I talked to a friend of mine who's been involved in politics for a long time as a lobbyist down in Harrisburg. We're talking decades. And I said to him, I said, what's your take on the elections? And he said, he still thinks that Mastriano has the lead. And we had another indication of that this week when a new ad popped up by Bill McSwain. McSwain was the U.S. attorney for the Eastern District appointed by Donald Trump. And Trump turned on McSwain over the election issue. He said, don't vote for McSwain. He wouldn't do for me what was needed to be done to overturn the Pennsylvania election results. Well, McSwain is now out there with an ad, and of all of his opponents, he's attacking only Doug Mastriano. That gives you some indication of where his polling is, that he's got to knock Mastriano down. Now, we'll see. I happen to think that Dave White, maybe the dark horse in the candidate, in the race, I'm not sure. And we still also have our own local Lou Barletta in the race.
Does anything in the way of policy separate these guys?
Not an awful lot. There have been debates. And, but they're not talking about a lot of policy. They're talking about how pro-Trump they can all be. That's the number one thing, even if Trump doesn't endorse them. And then they talk about that they're pro-gun, pro-life, anti-immigrant. But that's about it. They don't have plans for health care. They don't have plans for the infrastructure of Pennsylvania. I mean, Josh Shapiro's out there says we've got to bring the internet to everybody and things like that. They don't have any of that stuff. They're just running on the social issues and not policy issues. And in some ways, it worked. Sometimes it worked.
Why are they? What about the Senate? The Republican Senate race.
Yeah, that. Well, you've got three outsiders running. Carla Sands, who was in the Trump administration, I think she's pretty well faded. You've got Dave McCormick, who's the hedge fund manager. He's got some really good, he can afford this stuff, and he's running a very expensive race backed by a lot of his billionaire friends. But his ads are, I'm pro-gun, and he has deep Pennsylvania roots, but he left 30 years ago. And he's anti-immigrant and pro-Trump. And then you have Dr. Oz, who's the celebrity factor, who, lives in New Jersey. There were some more questions raised this week. I think the Philadelphia Inquirer had something about the fact that they traced his postings on Twitter or Facebook, and they're all coming from New Jersey, is his real home. He lists his voting address as his in-laws' home in Pennsylvania, that kind of thing. And all you see on television are pro McCormick, anti McCormick, pro Oz, anti Oz. They're all saying, McCormick's a closet liberal. He voted. He likes Biden. And the other way is Oz is just a Hollywood liberal. He voted for Hillary, or he was with Hillary, and it's kind of crazy. And I don't know if there's this one woman in the race, Kathy Barnett, I think her name is, who is a radio personality who's very smooth, and she may sneak through here in a fractured field. Everybody's in the teens or low 20s. It's who can get their vote out, and I wouldn't, I wouldn't be putting a bet on who's going to come across. I think
Kathy Barnett is the is a black former state senator. No, she was a former professor. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think she was a county. She might have been a county office holder or something. I'm not sure.
So her policy don't differ from Oz's or McCormick's. I mean, she's a Second Amendment type. School choice, meaning anti-public education, anti-abortion, anti-immigrant, and, of course, against teaching critical race theory, which is not taught anywhere.
Well, the school issue is a subtext, and it's a subtext, really, of the religious right. That's something that, we really have to be looking at. It keeps coming up and coming up. And of course, I think last week we talked about this guy. Was this Christopher Rufo from the Manhattan Institute, who's
right.
Which of course is funded by the billionaires, and his main purpose in life, he wants to do for the Manhattan Institute on public education is what the Federalist Society did to pack the courts on the right side, and that's to do away with public education,
right.
Which. Of course,
but
he's
open about. By the way, he's not sneaking around about it. He's open about it.
He's open about that, and this goes back to the Koch brothers and Democracy in Chains, the libertarian philosophy.
Yeah.
Except the libertarians aren't big on religious schooling. They're big on just privatizing education because there's a lot of money involved in that.
Yeah.
That's a major, major movement. But the religious right is for that because they think with this Supreme Court that they'll allow public funds to be used for religious education.
And they will. There's no doubt about it.
And of course, then the Catholic Church comes in. They want that because they've had problems funding their schools. And then the Orthodox Jews want that, particularly in New York State. But of course, they don't want the public, oversight of that stuff.
None of them want democratic activity. They not Democratic Party. I mean, democracy.
You're right. This is autocracy.
Yeah.
And then you get back. We're back now. We're circling around to male-centered autocracy, which fits into a lot of the conservative religions.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. God is a man, type of things.
Not only a man, he's got blonde hair.
Yeah. That part of it. So all of these things are subtexts that are roiling around underneath the surface there, where there's no consistent overall arching theme that people are looking at. And they're confused because of this, because there's the internal contradictions are huge.
Well, in this situation, what are the Democrats doing?
That's a good question.
I mean, there have been polls, we talked about this, asking Democratic Party voters, what do they think of the issues? And it turns out, whatever they think, not too many think, there's no consensus about what the issues should be. But that, to me, indicates a lack of political leadership on the part of the political leaders, because the whole point of politics is to shape the issues, is to create consensus, create coalitions behind issues. This is what we're going to do in this period. If there's a party whose adherents can't come to an agreement on what the issues are, that's not an effective party. They don't have any strategic thrust. They can't possibly do anything other than react to what their opposition proposes, and then the fight is about the issues that the opposition proposes.
Yeah, and you don't want that. You want to be talking.
Well,
you want to.
That's not leadership.
No, that's. well, we're back to Will Rogers. You know, I belong to an organized political party. I'm a Democrat, type of thing.
But in Will Rogers' time, despite the funny comments, there was the New Deal. There was leadership. The Roosevelt administration provided leadership. They said, this is the issue. These are the issues.
Well,
And the Republicans got nowhere for 20 years because they couldn't stand against that progressive, forceful, consistent leadership along the needs of working people, because they had to overcome the Depression.
Yeah. Yep, and then that generation faded out.
Yeah.
Reagan came along, and, you know, the irony, of course, was that he's the only union president to ever be elected to the presidency.
Yeah.
And, of course, then he set about destroying unions.
Right.
Which, and we're trying again to reestablish. I mean, if you saw that, we've gotten a few more Starbucks have been organized, and
well,
there's going to be
more.
Well,
I think there are now almost 200 different Starbucks that have filed applications for union elections.
But again, those are, you know, store by store type.
Store by store, exactly.
You don't have the one union going around, you know, coming around and saying, we want, you know, all of you to be under one roof.
No, that may be true, but that's also a cause by the by the government, because the National Labor Relations Board have decided that it has to be store by store. That's great victory for the Republicans, great victory for the owners of Starbucks franchises. It makes it nearly, I mean, what they've done is they've made it impossible for a union, let's say, pick any union, it doesn't matter, to come and say, we want to have elections in all the Starbucks stores,
right,
because the NLRB says you can't do that.
Yeah.
So... they're doing it. They have to do it that way, but of course, it makes it very hard.
Yeah, but then we get into like the trade unions, and of course, the dilemma we've hear from the leadership that the rank and file are just, you know, again, you get the macho stuff. You know, the building trades, which are heavily male, they don't, you know, they're worried about immigrants, and they're worried about race theory and things like that, instead of the economic stuff.
The building trades have historically been a reactionary element in the union movement because they have never supported organizing all people who work in the building trades. They have always had the attitude called business unionism that their only job is to restrict the people who can work, and they represent those people, but they don't let anybody into the trade.
Right.
Well,
yeah,
that means that most of the work is non-union.
Yeah, and a lot of it's hereditary, and it kind of operates like the police and the firemen.
It operates like a guild. It operates like a feudal guild, and the radicals in the labor movement in the beginning of the 20th century, the end of the 19th century, this was the big issue. It was, you know, the trade unionism as against what was called industrial unionism. It organized all the workers in a given industry into one union. That gives the workers strength. But the trade guild unionist types say, oh, no, we'll have carpenters, we'll have boilermakers, we'll have steam fitters, they'll all be separate, and so forth and so on. And therefore, they can never be effectively, strong. In a factory, that doesn't work.
No.
On a construction site, of course, these guys have different
skills,
and they come on the job at different times, and you can maintain that. It still isn't good, but you can do it. You still have situations on construction sites where carpenters will demand something, but Teamsters will cross the picket line, or steam fitters will, or electricians will cross the picket line, if there is a picket line.
Right. Well, remember the unionization got its big boost here in northeastern Pennsylvania, the IWW, Terrence V. Powderly, and the coal miners, John Mitchell.
And we had a great union leader who was the mayor of Scranton for four consecutive terms.
Wasn't that Powderly?
Terrence Powderly, yeah.
Terrence V. Powderly, yeah. Yeah.
There's a statue to him up in the courthouse. And there's another statue on Main Avenue.
Okay, yeah, there's...
It's good to make statues to people who are dead and you don't have to follow anything that they stood for. You just make a statue.
So anyway, we have all of that, and we got some other stuff. You know, you talked about this week we have the Ohio primary, and if you think Pennsylvania primary is bad, I mean the Ohio primary is just unbelievable between Josh Mandel and J.D. Vance. Vance, of course, who abrogated everything he ever stood for in order to become a toady to Trump and got Trump's endorsement. And Mandel,
who's an employee of Peter Thiel.
Yeah.
He's not even an independent actor.
Right.
And Peter Thiel is putting millions and millions into the campaign for J.D. Vance in Ohio.
Yeah, Vance was down, and now he's at least pulled even, but we'll have to see.
Yeah.
Of course, Mandel is one of these that thinks that the separation of church and state ought to go away.
Right.
Again, that would be a position for the privatization of schools.
Right.
That kind of thing. The Democrats took a hit in New York State this week when the state court, the Court of Appeals, which is the highest court there, said that the legislature's gerrymander, which would have created three or four more Democratic seats in the House, couldn't stand. That it was against, the Constitution or the laws of New York type of thing, which is interesting. All in other places in the country where the Republicans have been gerrymandering, some of them have been struck down, but then the Republicans just come back and do something just as bad or worse. And then they've been getting some of those squeaked through. So far, Maryland and New York, which are gerrymandered for the Democrats, have been struck down. If this is a close race in terms of who's going to control the House, that could make a difference.
The Florida gerrymandering, everybody agrees, of giving the Republicans in the House four seats guaranteed that they didn't have in this time.
Right. That's a lot.
Yeah, of course. What's the Democratic majority? Five? Six?
Yeah. Yeah. That's about it. And meanwhile, there's this other issue that's going on that it's too removed from ordinary people's minds, is this, the issues that came through the coup, the January 6th things that, where democracy is really at stake. And we had an article published this week by former conservative, I think he was a Circuit Court of Appeals judge, Michael Luddick. He was always considered one of the thinkers of the conservative movement, saying that we better watch out, that this idea of an independent legislature, which can determine who the electors are for president, despite the popular vote, has traction.
Better say that again. It's despite the popular vote, without regard to the popular vote.
Right. If the legislature decides that, although in Michigan, for instance, although Biden got 125,000 more votes than Trump, if they decide that wasn't a fair election and we're going to certify only Republican electors,
they have the right to do it.
They have the right to do it according to this theory.
According to this theory, there's nothing in the Constitution that says that the legislature is bound by the popular vote.
Yeah. Reality doesn't matter.
No. Reality does matter. The reality is the Senate and the House, the legislature, has the right. The people don't have the right. That's the original constructionist argument. Now, it's all crap. It's all nonsense. There's nothing in the law. There's nothing in history. There's nothing in anything that justifies it. But you don't need anything to justify something if you want to do it.
Well, the great irony is that they wanted to do it this time, but they were too inept, and Mike Pence wouldn't go along with it. Next time, if they put in these phony or substitute electors, like from Michigan saying, Trump lost the popular vote, but we're only certifying Trump electors, under the present situation, Kamala Harris is going to have to decide whether she's going to approve that or not. That could be an interesting thing. And of course, they'll attack her as a black and as a woman and whatever. But it's something that needs to be watched. Again, this is the product of, the Koch brothers funding the Federalist Society, putting judges on the federal bench and the
Supreme Court. You've got at least four justices on the Supreme Court who agree with it.
At least four. Kavanaugh is a question mark there, but probably agrees with it. And Roberts may not matter for Roberts at this point, where he stands.
Yeah, but Alito agrees with it. Clarence Thomas agrees with it. Gorsuch, Barrett agrees with it.
And Gorsuch
agrees with it. Right.
That's it. So.
So this weekend, this day that we're broadcasting is May Day, a holiday. It was International Workers' Day. Commemorated a strike in Chicago on May 1st, 1886, for the 8-hour day. Imagine that. But at that point, they were already, the demand for the 8-hour day was already 20 years old. It took another 30 years to get the 40 years to get the 8-hour day as the standard work day.
Right.
So anyway, that was the international holiday. That then became Law Day, right?
Law Day. Yep, I have an op-ed in the Scranton Times on that. About, again, one of these things, whether the Constitution is a dynamic instrument or whether it's, mired in these originalist meanings of the words and things like that. And again, this is Federalist Society type of stuff that no one ever thought of until 30 or 40 years ago. I mean, where were they for the first 100 years of the 200 years of the Constitution?
Yeah. All right, we're done for today. Next week, we'll see what happens in Ohio. The voting will have taken place.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.